Okay, yeah, so you can see we probably did this a little bit backwards, but we want to make sure we didn't duplicate our efforts over these two panels. So I'm going to take a step back and talk more broadly about the strategic operating plan. I know that you had our Deputy Commissioner of Services Enforcement out here yesterday. He probably talked a lot about it. So I'm just going to quickly highlight. There are really five objectives in that strategic operating plan, and then it rolls out into about 42 or so initiatives. And I talked about Initiative 3.3, which is around compliance on the prior panel. But if you look at this slide and the next slide, it really kind of distills those five objectives and all those initiatives down to kind of four broad categories. And the first one is service. And we've heard our commissioner talk quite a bit about this. And he kind of summarizes it as, if you need to reach us, you should be able to reach us and address your concern, your issue, your challenge. So that's really what we talk about when we think about service. The next one we have there is enforcement. I talked about it, so I won't go into too much detail, but because we'll talk about it a little bit later on as well. But the thing to realize, when LB and I, when we talk about large business and the strategic operating plan, if you think about the compliance or the enforcement arena, it really touches upon all our three primary areas: large corporations, large partnerships, and large high-income, high-wealth taxpayers, really things that we take a lead role in. And so LB&I is very involved in the strategic operating plan when it comes to enforcement. Let's go ahead and go to the next slide.
I'm there.
Okay. Always ahead of me, Kathy. I appreciate that. So the last two things, and I mentioned this again, is really about data. Data really plays a key role into all we do. Ensuring that we can identify those taxpayers that are potentially not compliant, but also, as importantly, those who are truly compliant, so that we don't reach out and initiate any kind of interaction with you unnecessarily. So really getting the data, making best use of it is high on the priority list. And finally, and I failed to mention this, so it's good that it's in this one, is really thinking about tax certainty. How do we ensure that taxpayers get it right early, that we can give you, that you have the proper guidance, the proper information to do things correctly right out the gate, so our interactions are there's less at the compliance level or the enforcement level at the end, but really helping you get it right up front. And so we had a press release that came out asking for your input on that. And I'm not sure if that's in materials or not, Kathy.
No.
But if you go to the irs.gov website, you can type in Tax Certainty Initiative 2.4, and you should be able to find that pretty quickly. But we ask you to come in with, what are your ideas and thoughts around some of the things that we'll talk about later on today? Is how do we improve those? How do we make them better for both the IRS and the taxpayers to get it right, less costly, get that through in a more timely manner? But the one thing I want to just quickly mention was partnerships. We're also interested in your thoughts around how do we ensure tax certainty for partnerships and partners. That's kind of new. We haven't really thought about it in that terms. So how could we do that? Because we realize the tension of the entity versus the partner and the taxpaying taxpaying partner. So how do we ensure that both people can feel comfortable with whatever the outcome is of a tax certainty program? So I think I hit everything there, Kathy. So I think
okay.
I'm gonna turn it back over to you.
Just a real quick question. I heard a rumor that you, Cliff, have some responsibility over the BBA partnership website content.
I do through my staff. Yes.
Okay. So you would be. So if we see something on that that we think might be confusing, or there would be a way to improve taxpayer certainty, you'd be the right person to.
Yeah, certainly. If there are thoughts and ideas about how we improve that, because we're all learning. I mean, it's hard. It's difficult to say. Well, we're still learning about BBA because it was passed back in 2015, right, and implemented for 2018. It's still new for all of us.
Yeah.
And the reason why you, as taxpayers and practitioners, are really on the front lines of that, we're a little bit behind on that because we're not auditing a lot of those returns yet. We're just starting to get to that. So you have a lot more experience with some of the nuts and bolts challenges you face. And so, yeah, if you have suggestions, ideas, we're always looking to update that, just to make it better so that you have the right guidance.
Yeah. Joe, and we talked with Cliff's group
I mean, Elizabeth Wagner, I don't know where she is, but how many times a day does she email me? So we talk constantly with Cliff's group to make sure that, because they'll come to us and say, hey, we're seeing this problem. It's not working. How do we, you know, do we need to change the form? Do we need to change the instructions so that it's clear what people are supposed to do on that form? And we're constantly trying to update those things, figure out the most efficient way for things to work, because I think we said in the last panel, we just want it to work. That's our goal.
Okay, so we'll talk a little bit now about some of our resolution programs. So I think we'll start with the Fast Track Settlement Program. And, you know, over time, some of our programs have really diminished in use. And with the IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act, and that funding, we want to focus and re-emphasize these programs. They're out there, and we are interested in using them.